BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG, and I also work clinically as a nurse consultant as well. So today I have great delight in introducing to you two members, Katie Mackey and also Malou Bengston Wheeler. Now, I'm actually going to read out their bios because they very kindly sent me the bios and it's absolutely amazing what they actually do. So I'm first of all going to talk about Malou, who moved to the UK from Sweden in 1995. She's had a career in the charity section and the NHS, and she also leads on healthcare professional engagement at Changing Faces. And Changing Faces today is going to be our focus. And before that, she was head of patient experience in an acute trust. And Malou is a values-led practitioner with a strong belief in the power of person-centered care. And then we have the lovely Katie, who is an eczema advocate and content creator behind Mackie's Moments and Itch and Bitch. We will actually be tagging those into our podcast as well, so look out for them. I was very fortunate enough to have a look at those this morning. Absolutely fantastic. And Katie on these sites shows honest experience-led insights into life with a chronic skin condition. Her content focuses on breaking stigma, raising awareness of the mental health impact of eczema, and creating space for a more open conversation around visible differences. And she's also a volunteer campaigner with Changing Faces UK, supporting national campaigns that drive representation and awareness. So welcome both to the BDNG podcast today. I'm very happy to have you both here.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. So, Malou, I'm going to come to you first, if that's okay, and then we'll head on to Katie. So, first of all, could you just sort of explain, for those that don't recognise the support of Changing Faces, what exactly is Changing Faces, and just tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so Changing Faces is a charity that was set up in 1992 by Dr. James Partridge, OBE, and he suffered life-changing burns as a teenager and was very keen to share that insight and experience that he had from a very long period of recovery and so on and so forth. And also that stigma that he experienced after his accident. And it was very important to him to fight for the rights of people that had visible differences, both sustained or acquired from birth. And that's what we still do today. And I'm very proud to be part of that work.
You should be very proud as well. And Malou, I'm just going to direct the next question at you as well. How did you become involved with Changing Faces?
Yeah, so Changing Faces, I was in the NHS and I was longing to get back to the charity sector. And it was a job that came up. And obviously, because I had been involved in healthcare, it seemed really, it seemed just a really useful way of taking that experience back into the charity sector and get involved in healthcare professional engagement, something that I absolutely love doing, and being able to take the stories of our communities out there and use it for education and campaigning. I love it.
That's fantastic. Yeah, you definitely have that compassion and passion about Changing Faces, without a doubt. So we're really excited to be broadcasting this today, and also the fact that we'll get lots more insights into Changing Faces as well. Thank you. So Katie, I'm going to come to you. Katie, you obviously have done amazing work with Changing Faces and what you do as well on social media. So again, can you just explain, Katie, how you became involved and a little bit of background into your involvement?
So I would say you'd have to start from when I started sharing my journey online. So I've been diagnosed with eczema since I was around 3 years old. I'm now 29, and it wasn't until 2020 that I actually started posting online. So in the last like 6 years now, it sounds crazy actually, but when I did start posting online, I was just like in the depths of my skin, and I was kind of, you know, it was COVID time, so we're all at home and you weren't working as you usually are, and I think there was a lot more stress as well. So I think my skin also wasn't coping as well. And I was feeling really isolated and I couldn't actually get the kind of help I needed. So this led me to going online and starting to be like, look, this is what I've been dealing with. I've been hiding it my whole life. And from those initial posts, I then started to find community and then I started to find charities. And among one of those conversations, someone happened to mention Changing Faces and saying how amazing their website was and how there was just all these different resources on there. So obviously I went and took a look and I was actually like shocked that I didn't know they existed because I already knew about other like eczema charities. But I think for me, when I saw Changing Faces, it was the kind of human aspect of the case studies and the value in what they put on that website. So they have like everything. So you have like the like you have the different stories from different people, but then you also have like the medical professional side as well. So I think I had a really good balance. So I found like I was learning a lot and there was loads of stats. And then from that, I started to tag them on my posts because I was like, if I found this really valuable, someone else is going to find it valuable. So I always like with my content, because it's got a lot of mental health focus, to leave someone with something positive. And I feel like Changing Faces was a really good positive charity to link into, be like, these are the different things going on, but remember there's always help out there. And then I would link back through to them, and then I just end up having chats with them, and I built a really good relationship with the team there. And then the one day I saw that they were opening applications for the next run, and I was like, I might as well try. So I went and applied to become a volunteer campaigner, and my campaigning that I'd just been doing for fun and because I love the charity then became official. So it's that's the kind of short version of that. I hope in that little spill I might have covered all of your question, but let me know if you think there's anything else.
That's fantastic, Katie, and a really good insight. And going right back to what you said at the beginning, you know, the isolation through COVID, that was very apparent, working as a healthcare professional, but also for the patients who were very, very isolated. And then you took that next step onto going into social media. So, Katie, I'm going to ask, how did you feel? Were you quite nervous about going into social media? And was it quite a daunting prospect, or were you full of enthusiasm and just went for it?
Okay, so I was terrified. I was actually terrified. Yeah. But part of that was I kind of got the, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, but there was a lot of other people online at that time started talking about like acne and other visible conditions. And because a lot of influencers weren't then showing, before it was like glitzy glam social media, you were seeing like, here's my event, here's my PR package. But suddenly there was a massive shift online where people were like actually talking about the realities of their lives, and it wasn't as glitzy and glossy, and you were getting people that had been hiding things for years talking about them. So I felt quite inspired by seeing like big celebrities. I remember there was one celebrity who started talking about a psoriasis, and I was like, what? Yeah. How? But yeah, and I was just really inspired. And then like I said, there was loads of people talking about like acne, and I just sat there for a minute and I was absorbing it for a few weeks, and then suddenly I was like, wait, why am I not talking about my skin condition? Why am I hiding it? I'm sitting here with my long sleeves even though no one else has seen me apart from people in my house. So it's like, it's that kind of slow mental shift you start to have. And then I feel like you sometimes get a bit angry at yourself as well, so you're like, well, I'm the one in control of what people see, so why don't I kind of take control of my narrative? I think it was, for me, it was more like I want to have control of what I can say about it. So it was me kind of being like, this is me, and take it or leave it. And it kind of felt very empowering, but I was terrified at first because I was like, if there's one negative comment, I'm deleting the whole thing. But I just remember I posted my first post. It's like, hi, I'm Katie. You've known me my whole life. But the reality is I've been hiding this part of me, which is actually a massive part of me. And it dictates a lot of what I'm doing, and I just want people to know and kind of take my power, you know. And I just was reclaiming my power, and I posted it out there, and I closed the app and ran away. And then a few hours later I opened the app and I was like, oh my god, it's got like so many comments, and it was all really nice and positive. And there were so many people that even in my life that were like, Kate, well, I've got eczema and I didn't know you had eczema, and I've been hiding it, you've been hiding it. Well, if we just come together and we had this chat and we'd known, you know, it helps you get further along when it comes to like taking that control and having the ability to even speak about it. And then also from all those little mini chats, you then get to the point where you're actually getting peer support, which I think is so important. But it was this kind of whole unraveling that happened. And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can understand the terrifying, you know, it's this terrifying prospect going onto social media. And I know as a nurse as well, you have to be, you know, very careful, and I, you know, we know the sort of challenges that are faced with social media, but also we know about the power of social media, and it's something we can't shy away from. So congratulations, Katie, on what you've done, because even having a look at a few of your posts this morning is phenomenal. And you know, you will have inspired and made people just, you know, open up maybe about their feelings and how they feel, and that they're not alone, which is massive, isn't it?
And yeah, sorry to jump in here, but I just think that what I've learned from social media is that everyone has a different experience when it comes to the lived experience of your visual difference or condition. But what I have found is the one thing that brings everyone together in the SADDIS expert is the mental health approach to these visual differences. And sadly, like, I can have many different triggers that then trigger my chronic condition, but other people have those different triggers. So although you can try and get all this advice on social media, the reality is you have different triggers, so then you need different treatments. But the one thing that I've found is that everyone has the same impact of how it's made them feel. And when you connect on that mental level and that personal level, that's where you find the kind of shared knowledge and then the mutual understanding and the comfort that comes with not feeling alone and the connection through that. And I think that's where you can really help each other. It's like, oh, I was feeling like this, so I started to do this, and then, oh, actually, I found, you know, this charity and they've really helped me. And you can really give advice when it comes to the mental health area and where you can, you know, build confidence together, really.
Building confidence is, like, you know, is definitely strong words, powerful words there, and definitely something you will be doing. And Molly, I mean, fantastic what Katie's saying there. And reading about one of Katie's posts as well, she mentioned about a study of how 500 people with eczema or visible skin disease, and 98% of those, you know, it affected them emotionally and psychologically as well. So going back to ourselves that are working in the NHS, and I know you worked in the NHS as well, how important do you feel, Malu, that it's something, you know, we should be openly talking about instead of basically, you know, talking about the side effects of medication and the treatments and, you know, taking the scores of our patients, maybe doing a bit of a quality life assessment and possibly ignoring it. I mean, how important of a message is it to get across to our listeners today about to speak about the psychological and mental health?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important. Every conversation matters. That really is true. And I think it's such an easy thing to do. I know that a lot of healthcare professionals might be a little bit nervous about how to approach that kind of things. But even if you just say, how are you? No, how are you really? That can make a huge difference to that person. And I think it's really important not just to see that visible difference as the immediate and assume things that that is what the person has come in for. I mean, we've had people who have gone in and been asked about their skin condition when actually they have a sore throat, just because that was the obvious one to look at. So I think it's really important to sort of be aware of the impact of those kind of things. But yes, having that confidence to just be empathetic and actually check in with people, I think is key.
Absolutely. Absolutely key. And I think as well, treating that person that's sitting in front of you as an individual and not, you know, a piece of skin is something I quite often say. You know, we're not looking, yeah, of course we're looking at the severity of the skin and possibly the treatments that we're going to be offering, but the fact is you've got a human being in front of you, and, you know, it's really important to discuss such aspects of how they're feeling. Definitely.
Yeah, and I think also as part of that, being perhaps mindful of the language that you use. So, for example, again, other campaigners have said, well, my skin was described as scaly and it made me feel really awful. And, you know, when I left that consultation, that was all I kept thinking about. And, you know, I think it's just, again, being mindful of the person in front of you and what they actually feel comfortable with in those conversations.
A really important point, and I think it should be on top of everyone's agenda, and, you know, what that person is coming in with today and how they feel about their skin, and, you know, describe the skin. And I'm sure people that have listened to me quite a lot have always, something I say is, you've got an expert sitting right in front of you, you know, and they can describe how their skin is today. You know, if they're having a good day, a bad day, this is kind of normal for me. You know, it's something that we have that conversation, and it's not me as a healthcare professional telling the patient, you know, about their skin and describing their skin. It's them actually having that two-way conversation and empowering. In a way, isn't it? I mean, Katie's obviously alluded to that, but it's that empowerment as well, and you know, and working in partnership is so important. Katie, I'm going to come back to you quickly as well. I mean, obviously we've talked about, you know, the emotional side, and you know, there's a lot to it, isn't there? I mean, you know, with your skin condition as well, obviously you have that itch. You have that constant itch sometimes, but it's not just about me saying to you, how's your itch today, Katie? How is it? Or 7 out of 10 today. You know, it's going a bit deeper and exploring, you know, if you're, you know, aspects of maybe not sleeping. Something that you mentioned in your one of your posts as well about stinging in the shower, you know, that kind of thing. So, and obviously the clothes that you wear as well. So how do you feel, Katie, that healthcare professionals should be asking these questions, and what's really important to you sitting in front of that healthcare professional?
I feel that when you're sitting in front of that healthcare professional, it's again what you were saying earlier about like language. I feel like they need to meet me on the human level rather than the clinical level, because I feel a lot of the time I'll go in there and it's just straight in. It's not like there's no like 10 seconds about, oh, how are you today? And like, I think we're missing the kind of human element, which then actually reduces your anxiety levels and opens you up. Whereas if you go in there and they're straight in, you just feel like you're a number rather than a human. And I feel like taking that little bit of time just to get to know them, and it doesn't take that long, it really helps the patient actually open up and be more comfortable. But also, when I say like language as well, I feel like a lot of the time I will try to explain how I'm feeling, but they might jump in and correct my language to a more medical way. Whereas if they're just listening and hearing, they'll understand what it means. But when they interrupt you and they're like, oh, you mean this, and then they like change your wording, or like say I say oh, like itching, they're like, oh, you mean hives, or like, you know, and it just, it's that like interruption that kind of stops you and can make you close off a bit more, and it makes you feel like you're being corrected rather than being listened to, if that makes any sense. And again, it's all about just like when you feel like you're being heard, you feel more comfortable to then share. And then it's just all the different elements. Like I've had like medical professionals turn around to me, and maybe I'm having a bad mental health day when it comes to my skin, and I think they're missing the point on the fact that although they might say, oh, that doesn't look that bad, I've had someone else here that's way worse, you've got to understand that if that's bad for me, maybe you're not looking to treat the physical symptom. You should be like, oh, okay, I'm sorry to hear that makes you feel that way. Have you thought about talking therapies? And there's so many other things they could refer me to very easily that aren't necessarily treating the physical symptom. It's treating the mental health and taking that kind of 360 approach to the whole person. And that's what I find is missing a lot of the time. It comes, I keep going back to it, but it's the human element. See me, not my condition.
You say the right words, Katie, definitely. You know, you should be out where you are out there, you know, saying what you say. But, you know, you really are very, very good with the wording and making people think about what they're saying as well to the patient in front of them. We know, and this is directed at both of you, we know the challenges we face in the NHS. You know, yeah. We know we've got limited time, and we know that, you know, it's like the importance for power above is very much see a patient, see a patient, see a patient, see a patient. So we're getting less and less time, and we're getting more and more patients. However, and I know Katie said this, you know, there is ways around this, definitely, and it's so important. And I'm going to direct this at both of you. I'm going to come to Malou first. How, you know, if I've got 20 minutes to see a patient, maybe for the very first time, I don't know this patient at all. I mean, what's, obviously, I know that maybe, well, let's throw in eczema, for example, a patient's got eczema. What are the importance, you know, how am I going to build up that rapport very quickly? And also the fact that, you know, what's going to be important to that patient? Could we have some keywords from you? And then I'm going to come to Katie.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, we've got Hello, my name is. I think that is a very good starting point. You know, introduce yourself a little bit and then just clarify what you feel that you're there to discuss that day. So my understanding of this consultation is that how you see it as well? Are there any particular issues that you would like to pick up on in addition to that? It doesn't take a long time to say, and I think it can really create the foundations for how that conversation goes. We are aware of compassion fatigue, but I think if you actually invest that time with the patient, it's going to make that interaction much easier for the healthcare professional as well, and maybe give that opportunity to actually discover that compassion again. So I think that is really important.
Absolutely. And sometimes the basics and the little things matter. I mean, even having your chair directed at the patient and not, and you see it all the time. Consultants, nurses will have their back to the patient, typing away on the letter, and it's just dreadful. And yeah, absolutely. Katie, I'm going to come to you now. So I'm your new nurse. I've done what Somalia's told me and I've introduced myself. I've tried to make you feel as comfortable as possible. I'm looking at you in the right direction. So what's going to be important to you?
I think like what Malou said, it's like if they just ask me, so why are you here today? Like, what do you want to achieve out of this? And what is affecting you the most? What do you think you're struggling with every day? Like, what is the one thing? Because it might not necessarily, like I said, be the physical what you're seeing. It's about how I'm feeling and how that affects me. So I think anxiety is a very common thing that comes up with a lot of my friends with skin conditions and visual differences. And like, it's like, how is the thoughts and feelings about your condition stopping you from doing what you want to do? And I've said to Malou before, like, so obviously I've got eczema and allergies, and they're very flare-based conditions. And I can go from being completely eczema-free, like you can't see it physically, but it's always on your mind mentally. Like you're always thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. And you've got this like weight you carry even when you can't see it. And with that weight, it's just like the mental load it's already taking up and the things it's stopping you from doing, because you know maybe you've identified a trigger and you feel like you can't go and do certain things. And I feel like just focusing in on, like, it really is just the mental health side of things, and just asking me how I'm feeling about it would be my biggest thing I would love to have. It's like, how are you feeling? Have you noticed anything that's helping? Because then you can identify areas in which maybe I want to look forward more into, and in a dream world, hopefully go and get further referrals for. But I understand that things take a long time. And I think when it comes to that, not showing that there's a shutdown in any way, because I feel like a lot of the time I might have come in there very prepared and say, I've noticed that this trigger is affecting me. I would love to go for patch testing because of this. And then instead of being like, oh, well, the wait time's going to take years, 2 years, just be like, okay, cool, we can do that for you. And then you can be the positive and then maybe give a little bit of a negative, but don't shut it down. So I feel like a lot of the time I get told the reasons why I shouldn't be sent places rather than why it could help. And I think leading with the positive and then following up the negative makes it still stay open and not be feeling like you're not being listened to again. And it was funny that you did bring up about the physical contact and the way they look, because you just described one of my derm experiences that really brought my anxiety through the roof and ended up with me crying, because I went for patch testing in 2024 after all my referrals and everything. And it was in the final appointment where you get to talk through your results. I walked into the room and clearly they were a really busy derm department at Central, but my dermatologist didn't look away from the screen, and oh my God, I just started crying, because it's like, I remember they were typing away on the screen, and they were just asking me like, oh, hi Katie, and then, oh, I can see on here you've got these results, this means this and this and this. And then it was just really like closed and clinical, and like I wasn't being seen at all. And then I went to go and respond to a question, but because I felt such like disconnect from the dermatologist, that I immediately, when I started talking, my voice cracked, and she turned around and she was like, and I think she realized that she should have looked at me, and like, because immediately I was like struggling to kind of explain myself because I was feeling really anxious. So it was interesting that you did bring that up, and I think even just like those turning to me and seeing me is such a big thing.
It's
It's
massive, isn't it?
such a
It
small
is.
amount of time it takes as well.
Yeah, and you see it all the time, and it's so sad because how I mean, if it was I was that person on the other end, with a back turned to me, it's very, very difficult. And we do
But
know.
I want to say some positives from that experience as well, actually, because before it was kind of a contrast as well, because before I got into that room, they actually did something really amazing. So they outside of the actual room, there was this waiting room, and on the board, they had like a cool spider diagram, and it was saying who's in the department today. And then like a cute fun fact about them. It was humanizing the nurses and the dermatologists. And then it had like a quote about like skin conditions and stuff. And it's like, don't let your skin define you or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But then so I was really kind of excited going into that room, and I felt more like I dropped a bit when I walked in, when I didn't get that human connection that I was seeing outside. So yeah, but I feel like even if you just put little things like that into your waiting rooms and give people things to focus on, it's really nice. And yeah. But
a really good idea. That's really positive, actually. Really, yeah. Really fantastic. Yeah, no, I'll take that forward as well to my hospital, definitely. But yeah, you're right. You know, you've got the healthcare professionals that are human beings as well. And, you know, we totally understand we're under challenges and things like that. But, you know, there is the basics that we can do and make that patient feel valued and, you know, supported and feeling like, you know, they've had a positive experience as well. And there's a lot of patients out there that do, which is really good. And you mentioned there about, you know, not shutting down services. And I think that's a really good point as well. The waiting lists are massive. We know that. I mean, even to get into secondary dermatology, it's horrific these days. But I think being honest with the patient in front of you is so important. And, you know, that's something that we need to do. And even the nature, you know, eczema, yeah, you may have clear skin today when you're seeing me, but you know, a week ago on that you may have photos, or you know, it was really you know, really, really bad, really itchy, and really causing me a lot of distress. So it's having that conversations with the patient as well. So we could speak about this all day, but I'm not. We're going to go on to changing faces. So again, it's the support networks. We've already mentioned signposting, because at the end of the day, we've only got, you know, 20 minutes with a patient, and it's really important to, you know, provide that support. And sometimes we can't provide it, but we do know a man that can. And it's just doing that signposting and even discussing it at the next appointment. You know, how did you find changing faces? I mean, that's quite often what I do. And if they're getting the good support from it, then that's fantastic. So what do we do? How do we signpost? And then I'm going to come on to what resources are all available in changing faces as well. So, Malou, how in the NHS do we signpost? What's the best way?
So I think the best way is to actually look at our website. We've got fantastic patient information on there. But also, like Katie said, there is a section for healthcare professionals. So it's very easy, either that you can actually signpost the patient yourself, or you could ask the patient to refer themselves into to changing faces and look at the different resources that we have. So that's the best way of doing it.
Fabulous. And are changing faces quite active, Katie, on social media and like Instagram, LinkedIn? Are they quite active on there?
Yeah, so Changing Faces does quite a lot of campaigns, and they'll do a lot of really good video content and just showing people's personal journeys and stories, and a lot of storytelling and many different visual differences. And I feel like the human level is definitely there when it comes to changing faces. And it's also very inspiring, because the way you see these different campaigners and what they're doing, like some of them are professional athletes and actors, and it gives you the empowerment that you were looking for, really, and inspires you to show that you can do what they're doing and more. So I find it very inspirational. When it comes to like their website, again, I just want to say, like, they had like a lot of stats on there, and you know, you mentioned the 98% stat. I originally found that through Changing Faces, and I found a lot of resources that then I could go and look more into, because I like to read up on things. But I remember it was from like the Mental Health and Skin Report, and that stat empowered me, because it's like 98%, we are the majority. And I think often when you're living with a visual difference or skin condition, you feel like you're alone and you haven't got anyone else. But the reality is, we're all just kind of hiding. And I'm hoping that becomes less and less, so we get to see more and more of other people just being their authentic selves and inspiring others, really.
I really hope so, Katie. And I think it is coming, isn't it? Definitely people are being more open and speaking about it. And I think, you know, like, for example, changing faces are really empowering patients to do that as well, which is really, really positive. And Malu, you mentioned as well, there's obviously different sections, and I'm coming at this that I don't know anything about changing faces for our listeners out there that have never, you know, gone onto the website or weren't aware of changing faces. So I'm going to just probe a little bit more. You mentioned that there's sections for healthcare professionals and there's sections for support. How does it work on the website?
Right, so I think the best thing is to just go in there and have a look at the homepage. I think that's quite self-explanatory, so that you can find the different sections on there. So like I said, for healthcare professionals, for patients themselves, we also work with children, young people, the parents, they can go in and find information. And also we've got some fantastic resources for education as well. So if teachers want to do classes with children, just to highlight visible differences, which I think is really important. So that's really how the website works. Like I said, we've got really good patient stories on there, which I think is reassuring. Katie has mentioned that quite a lot. And I think, you know, we want people to feel safe, seen and connected. And I think that is a really good starting point to find other people that have gone through those experiences themselves and have found a voice to talk about it. So that for me is a really good way in.
It is. And patient voices is becoming so important. You see that with a lot of skin conditions and other, you know, illnesses as well. But patient voice is out there now, isn't it? And becoming, you know, part of sort of pathways and, you know, interventions, which is really important. So as a patient, could you, you know, offer that? Could you go on and say, you know, I want to share my story? Is that something that's available on Changing Faces?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Katie can probably talk a little bit about that, how you sort of got involved and shared your story.
Yeah. So like I was saying, it was, you know, I was talking online and then started being up with the team like, oh, would you like to actually share your story? So I actually ended up working with the team and then writing out my story and putting it as one of their case studies on the website. And just, yeah. And I remember writing it together and we put images on there. So you can find a different story for every single different kind of condition and you can find something that will relate to you. I think it's also really important to mention that they've got a community part of the website where you can go and join their community and then you can go and say, I feel like some people when they're in a low headspace when it comes to their condition can find social media really difficult to log on to. Either it's triggering because you're seeing people going out and doing stuff which you feel like you can't do at that time, or it can just get quite overwhelming. And I feel like if you go to the Changing Faces part of the website where they've got like a community page, you can go through and you can just see people who are feeling the way you're feeling and feel a bit more like comfort and empowered, and also maybe share as well. Like it's kind of like a private, I would call it like a private social media just for people with visual differences. And I think it's great to get involved with conversations and maybe find people who also have the same visual difference as you.
Yeah. So the community for people with a visible skin condition, and they, you know, it's a safe space for them to communicate. Is that correct, Katie?
Any visible difference, not just skin conditions, yeah. But they've got it on the website, and I think it's not too far if you click through. It's called like the Changing Faces, and I think it's from Health Unlocked, but it's on one of the web pages and they'll give you a little background on there, but you can go and join it and then create your own little account. And you can just be a private account on there, like you don't have to show anything, you just sit and watch and read. And I think if you're feeling a little bit low, you can feel quite empowered just reading those little personal stories as well, like, and oh, I did this today and I'm feeling good because I did that, and like those kind of posts.
It's inspiring again, isn't it? It's being not alone, supported and giving you the strength to, you know, like you did, Katie. I mean, gosh, you came from that isolation in COVID times, and now what you're doing now is phenomenal. Absolutely. And Malu, as a healthcare professional as well, is there, I know some support networks do, for example, webinars on different skin conditions, but is there like webinars available on visible difference on the Changing Faces website?
Yeah, so we are very much about people feeling safe, seen and connected. And we are working on a series of webinars at the moment. We should have a schedule for those coming up quite shortly. We are also doing peer support groups. So that, again, something that we're developing further at the moment. And I think one really good starting point, not necessarily for healthcare professionals, but for patients, it's our support and information line that they can actually ring in and speak to someone who can guide them to our different resources and that kind of thing. So that's really useful.
Fabulous. And is there anything for, I know we're trying to get away from this to protect the trees, et cetera, et cetera, but is there any sort of resources that you provide for primary and secondary care that's, you know, physical? Because obviously there's still people out there that still prefer the physical side of leaflets and things.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have got resources. So if people get in contact with us via our info email, we can send out resources again. We are reviewing those at the moment, but absolutely we can send those. And I think there's been a lot of talk about that, actually. A lot of GP surgeries, dental practices, that kind of thing, they find just having a poster up in the waiting room is really important, and people can see that and think, yeah, I identify with that. And just nowadays with QR codes and everything else, that's a good way to start. But I think also healthcare professionals, we do have a healthcare professional newsletter, which I think is really good to sign up to, and that will help anyone to stay in touch with developments and the sort of resources that we have.
Absolutely. And we'll be posting all this on the end of this podcast as well. So for those that like QR codes, we'll definitely have a QR code out there as well, which is really useful. And I find that as a clinician, it's really great now we can do that, you know, just go on and QR code. Most people have phones these days, and you know, just QR code it, and it's fantastic. Whereas before it'd be, oh, have we got an information sheet on this? No, and then get someone to photocopy it or download it. So QR codes are phenomenal, absolutely. So I'm going to go back to you, Katie, because obviously we're sort of getting to the end of this podcast. But Katie, you have done remarkable work, and you should be so proud of yourself, you know, to inspire so many out there. And actually, as healthcare professionals as well, you will definitely be inspiring a lot of healthcare professionals as well. Is there any sort of key points you would like to get across in this podcast today?
Yeah. So I would say overall, I think it's not about looking better, inverted quotes on that one. It's about living better. And that should be the main point of care when it comes to it. Look at me as a whole, not just my condition. And that's the main thing I'd like to get across. But I also think too, maybe if there's a patient listening, I think one of the most important things is preparation for yourself. How can you work with your derm, your doctor, your GP to get what you want? How can I be more prepared going into my appointment to make my chat better? Like, I think preparation is key when it comes for patients as well. And, you know, tracking and doing as much as you can within your limits, and how you can go in there and concisely be like, this is what I want to achieve. So think about goals and small things like that, and focuses that you want to go in there with an appointment, so you can achieve those kind of goals and walk away feeling like you have achieved what you want. Because I think sometimes we go in there and we don't really maybe write down what we want to achieve. So you might get a bit overwhelmed. But if you just write a little list, take a few 5 minutes and you've got your list, and then you're helping each other to get what you want. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good points. And it's preparing that, you know, that 20 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever time limit you've got with that professional, that, you know, to have preparation is key.
And one last thing is that the one thing I love about the NHS is the app. Use the app. When you're going into appointments, document through the app. You can even just be like, oh, as I said on my app, you know, and then they can go up and like, oh, yeah. And that's great, because I love it when they get up on the screen and they can actually see on the record that my pictures I submit. Now, oh, yeah, I was talking about that. And then that is just so useful. And use the NHS app.
I think it's coming, Kate, isn't it? People get, and this includes us as well. Yeah. I must admit, not tech is not my middle name. But the fact is that I think we're, you know, becoming, I mean, in a few years' time, this is just going to be normal. You know, it's going to be so straightforward, and AI is definitely becoming a big part of the NHS. Yes, definitely. But, you know, at the moment, we're still on that sort of learning curve. But we are connecting a lot better with blood results and photos, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, hopefully in the past, it will be that, you know, we're not really cleared up with what's going on in primary care or with that patient that's just coming for the first time. So I think it is definitely improving. But as I say, when your tech isn't your middle name, it is a big learning curve, definitely, definitely. And Malu, is there anything you would like to share, any sort of key aspects you would like to get across to our listeners today?
I think we've sort of shared those key aspects, but I think if anyone is out there and they want to find out more resources, do get in touch with us. We have got a lot of expertise within our team, speaking with our campaigners, everything else. So that goes for both healthcare professionals and point patients. I think, you know, just contact us and, you know, that's a really good starting point.
Absolutely. And as a patient coming in as well, and I'm signposting to Changing Faces, is there anywhere else you would be signposting as well? Is there anywhere else you would sort of like patients to know about?
Well, I mean, we're not obviously the only charity out there. So there are other charities that people can contact that may be more specific for them. I think it's important to have a network of support. That is really key for me. So, you know, but yeah, you've got to find your community. And I think it's really important that people have someone that they can talk to and don't sit there in isolation and believe that, you know, there is nowhere I can go, because that is not true.
And I think that's our background responsibility, isn't it, as a healthcare professional? Like Katie was saying, you know, that patient comes in totally prepped for the appointment, but our background is, you know, possibly having that sort of list of signposting for patients that are coming in to see you, and having a, you know, they don't need to be an expert on the charity or the support group, but having the basic knowledge behind it, and also even advertising podcasts that are available. I do that a lot now with patients as well, because, you know, it's time, isn't it? Time for everybody. I mean, I've obviously mentioned about healthcare professionals' time, but time for patients, it's really tricky, even coming into a hospital. So having all these, you know, the signposting and aspects of difference, you know, social media, podcasts as well, you know, little snippets that may be really useful for patients out there. So that's our background homework that we should really be doing as well.
I think it's really important, because care doesn't stop in the hospital. So what actually happens with that patient when they step outside the door? And that's obviously where that community care comes in. So, yes, absolutely.
100%. And that's really good words again, because the fact is, you know, we're seeing them for a small percentage of the time, possibly even for the only time that year, you know, that patient has to live their life outside that hospital or GP practice. And it's so important to feel, I think, as a healthcare professional as well, to feel that actually I have supported that patient. I might not have all the answers, I might not be a miracle worker, but at least I have given them, you know, aspects of care that they can have some support through as well, which I think is really good.
Just a final point on that, Tina, if you don't mind, because I sat in an experience of Care Week this week through the Future NHS website, and one of the key things there was, yes, it's not just about waiting, it's about how you wait. So actually, you know, if there is something coming up in the future, it's really important that you can still feel supported whilst you're waiting for that appointment. And again, that comes back to then having those support networks in the community.
Absolutely, 100%. So I really could speak to both of you all day, because it's absolutely fantastic to speak with both of you, and congratulate yourself both on the work that you do, because without people like yourselves being so passionate about what you do, you know, the NHS would be a lot lower than it is. And we're really grateful for that. But I really would like to thank both of you. And for our listeners today as well, I would definitely recommend you going on to the Changing Faces website, have a good look around there, see what's available. And, you know, it's a really, really good resource to signpost your patients to. And the fact is that, you know, we are talking a lot more about stigma, about, you know, how that itch is maybe affecting us with, you know, the clothes, the non-sleeping, you know, the mental stability is really difficult when, you know, you've not slept, work, you know, cost of living, all these aspects are coming into our, you know, 20 minutes slots now. And you know, when we've got these valuable resources, it's so empowering as a professional as well to be able to signpost our patients to. So thank you very much, Katie. Thank you very much, Mali. And we will be putting all the details on the bottom of this podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.